Hi, I'm Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And today we will be discussing Whom Should Die. we will cover a grammar episode today where we discuss about why whom is used and when. And we will also talk about adjectives, how they work, and why some of them break the rules. For those who are new, we are an all-in-one podcast. We do episodes on marketing, grammar, vocabulary, writing, craft. Like our Wasted Words episode, where we talk about how you can add over 10,000 words to a manuscript of nothing but fluff if you're not editing them out closely. So it's one from our archives if you want to check it out. So this week in Writing True, I was reading The Expanse, Book 7. This is Persepolis Rising. And so the technique they were using as they were writing this scene is what we call background and centerpiece. And so what you do is you give us kind of a general view of the background, but then you focus on a single object to really kind of bring to life the scene. And so there's this huge explosion on the spaceship, and then Bobby goes out to look at the debris that is everywhere, and we get kind of a general look. And then we get this line: a mag boot stuck to the ceiling in the corner and had been melted into a stalagmite of rubber. She hoped there wasn't a foot in it. And it's that last sentence that I think really brings it to life, because the centerpiece is just about description, but the second line adds her emotional perspective to the scene, and I thought that was really good.
Well, and also an element of horror. Like, yeah. That's good stuff.
So, yeah. All right. So, today we're going to be discussing whom and fun. And then we will talk about them as just bigger elements of grammar all together. So, we're going to start out with a story. This was from Errant Pedantry, and Jay actually sent me this. So, it starts with a man named Ben Yagoda. And he wrote a post on Lingua Franca in which he confessed to being a whoever scold, right? Whomever. He was always correcting people on their whoms and their whomevers. And he took a few newspapers to task. Like, he would write in about, like, their writers and their editors were not using whom and whomever correctly. And then he was even corrected himself by Jan Freeman for some of the corrections he was issuing to other people because of the complexity of whom and whomever. All right? So we'll go over the basic rule here for those who aren't familiar. And the basic rule is that who and whoever are for subjects, and whom and whomever are for objects. Basically, it's he, she versus him, her. Right? Pretty simple. Now, the whoever and whomever are relatives, but still used in that same style. So this is why it's confusing, why so many people make these mistakes. Once people have a handle on English, they almost never mix up he, she, and him, her, right? Unless you're coming from a foreign language. Like, it's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Most people pick it up pretty easily. But the problem with the who and whom is that they're interrogatives, they're question words, and that shifts their position in the sentence. And that's why it creates confusion, because if subjects will almost always precede an object unless you're doing some grammar acrobatics. But if you're using a question, object or subject will always be the first word because of the question styling. And that's where it creates the confusion.
Wow.
And that's why there's that heavy leniency on who, because it's the subject and it comes first, even if it should be whom when it's an object, because we want subjects to come first, because that's how the rest of English grammar works. We want those subjects first. And so that's where the big confusion kind of roots. And all other complexities and confusions then follow from that, is that it moves those subjects and objects around and can create some confusion.
Yeah, that's a great point. When Joe mentioned this premise, I was skeptical. And he's like, just you wait. I'm going to convince you. And yeah, that's good point number one.
So the easiest way to kind of sort out who from whom is you have your W question, right? And then fill out the sentence. So W, I'm not sure which one it is. Do I give it to? So then you create a hypothetical answer. And in the hypothetical answer, what you want to do is convert that to its pronoun, whether it's a he, she, him, her, right? Instead of saying an actual name, you will use a condensed pronoun. So you convert it to a hypothetical answer, and then whatever you get, right, do I give it to, and if the answer is to him, then you know that should be whom, right?
So you're saying the question is, whom do I give it to?
Whom do I give it to? Because
the answer is to him.
Because the answer is an object, which means the question word should have been framed as an object.
Okay. Yep. Right. That makes sense.
So that's the short way to figure out which it is, right? So this is where my contention with whom comes in and why I think whom should die. Because the only other question word that replaces subjects and objects is what. It can work for a subject or an object in a sentence, and what functions as both. It is both subject and object, and it works great. No one gets confused. There's no problems. There's no pedantics condemning us for using it incorrectly. There's no argument over in English. What? And it works. We even use it to express non-questions, just general confusion. What? You know, and so that's my argument, is because of the nature of whom, it creates a lot of confusion within English speakers. And we have a perfect example of what would happen if we just got rid of it. And what?
Okay, but wait, isn't it? It is the parallel, and we have he and him, but we have it and it.
Right.
So when it's a person, we have a different way to say the subject and an object.
Right. But when we take it out of simple pronouns. Right. We condensed simple pronouns for clarity, but most of the time we're going to say, do I give it to Aaron? You know, do I give it to whatever? A lot of times we're not going to be having simple answers to him or he or she. Right. And so part of that condensing process is reducing it to the simple pronoun. Hmm. And so I see what you're saying with it, but. My point is that most of the time that subject and that object are not going to be reduced to the simple pronouns. They'll be the more elaborate. Dog, cat, car.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I guess all I'm saying is that it and what are companions, and they're the same for subject and object.
Right.
Whereas who and he and whom and him are companions.
Right.
Anyway. Okay, yeah. Carry on. Sorry for the tangent.
So, well, that's your case for not. But yeah, I think whom should go away. Also because most people don't use it anyway. And occasionally they get corrected, but they don't create confusion.
Yeah. No, I think that if you say, whom do I give it to, you sound pretentious.
You do.
And I have not yet written a character who is so pretentious as to say it that way.
Say whom.
So I tend not to use him in that situation.
I don't even think whom, and nor do I ever try to correct for it. But I am familiar with the rules and the way to test.
Yeah. You know what? I would say I have, to my shame, I have written some stuffy formal emails. And I think that I've used
whom. You're out there whooming around?
Yeah. which I'm actually like, deeply philosophically against overly formal.
Really? Yeah.
Like it's so pretentious.
Whom is very formal.
Yeah. I think, you know? So I feel like I've fallen into the formality trap.
Yeah.
But I mean, we
are the writers. We shape the language, and I think we should just stop following this ridiculous rule, right? It does nothing for the language but create confusion. And gives reasons for people to be annoying. That's the only thing we get out of it. Right?
Just giving fuel to the grammar nuts.
Yeah, fuel to the grammandos. There you go. So I think whom should die. Right? So now let's talk about adjective oddballs, right? Because I feel like an oddball, like just now we talked about whom. It's kind of an oddball word.
Yeah.
And the oddballs teach us a lot about the function of language. So we're going to talk about an oddball, and that oddball word is fun. Okay? And I'll show you why, right? So watch this, right? Fun is a single syllable adjective. And so let's look at how we use modifiers with single syllable adjectives. Blue, bluer, bluest. Fast, faster, fastest. But what happens if we do it with fun? Fun, funner, funnest. And I bet some of you are like, that's awful. Do not say those words. Do not. That does not work. You cannot say that. If you feel like that's wrong, or if you cringe at funner, a lot of people do. The reason is that most people have learned to use the fun to go with phrases like more fun or the most fun I've ever had. So here's the interesting thing when we look at more fun and most fun. And this is why it's an oddball, is because we're treating it like a noun. So if we look at a noun with water, you don't say waterer, you don't say waterist, you say more water. We have the most water, right? More and most, because it's a noun, and those are the words you use with a noun.
So in the phrase, the most fun I've ever had, that's a noun, and that's why it's most fun.
So,
right? It's the most fun.
No, I think the verb is to be.
Well, I have had fun.
Right. So
I have had fun.
And let's look at why. Why are we treating fun like a noun, right? And the reason is it started as a noun. In the 1700s is when the word is first introduced, and it's a noun. And then by the 1920s, it's being used as an adjective. The language has changed, but the rule of the modifiers that go with it haven't, thus creating the exception, right? Essentially, what we have here is exceptions within a language are like historical markers indicating change. And so that's what we have going on here. And so younger people tend to be more okay with funner versus more fun, right? They're more likely to say funner or funnest. And part of this is rooted in how we learn language. We learn the blanket rule and we apply it to everything until we slowly gain understanding of the exceptions. So the older you get, the more likely you are to prefer more fun and most fun to funner and funnest.
So I'm not sure what I've written. I just know that in conversation, I'll say funner and people call me out on it. People call me out on it because I'm a writer, I'm an author. They're like, it's not the correct way. And I just feel like it makes intuitive sense. And I tend to go for what's commonly spoken.
So, yeah. And like I said, a younger group, it is. But, you know, as we transition, it doesn't, because it became at least in the literature, we see it as an adjective in the 1920s. And yet still, it's being treated as a noun in its comparative and superlative, right? Those modifiers.
Man, this reminds me of another pet peeve. The people that are still typing two spaces after periods. That's probably like half of the listeners, actually. there's like the old school stuff that I think a lot of people are reluctant to transition to. But I like living on that front edge of the wave.
Well, I think refusing the ER and the EST for fun is clinging to what it was, that noun. Well, it hasn't been a noun in almost 300 years now, right? And I guess we don't know when the actual change was. But, you know, for over 100, it's been almost 100, almost 100 years, it's been an adjective and we're still treating it like a noun. Right. So it's one thing to say this is the rule, fun's an exception. But if you understand that exception, then the exception no longer makes sense. Saying, but it's not a noun. Let's stop treating it like a noun.
Yeah.
Because it's not anymore. That's not what the word is. And as usual, I propose a revolt. Reshape the language. Let's fix it. Fun is an adjective with one syllable. It gets ER and EST. That's how those words work. So this is a more complex issue that I do want to point out here, because you'll be like, what about more beautiful? That's an adjective. And so what we have here is, and this is why I do mention single syllable words, fun, blue, fast.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So when we look at two syllable adjectives, 90% of them will take ER or EST. But when we move into three syllable adjectives, they're almost all going to take more and most. So there are some more complexities there But just looking at that simple way is just, you know,
those, yeah, I love that.
The single syllables take ER and EST, and we should let fun be what it is. It's an adjective now. Let's treat it like one. So, yeah, it's one thing to just say that seems silly to have this exception. But when you understand the exception, you can argue your way out of it every time. It's like, no, no, it's an adjective. Let me show you. It used to be a noun. Don't treat it like a noun. You know, yeah. You're not writing it as a noun.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Yeah. Well done. Convinced.
Convinced. So, all right.
We would love to have you leave a review of the podcast and tell your friends about it. Especially if there's a favorite episode of yours, you should send that to your friend or friends or social network. We would love to have you check out one of our books, and subscribe to our newsletter if you want the Amazon keywords, which are really helpful in finding a market for your ads and getting a decent rate on click-throughs. And we would love to have you send us your blurb so we can critique it, which will be beneficial to you and to your fellow listeners. And if you have any suggestions or comments, please shoot us an email at, what's your email?
jbendoski, that's bendoski at gmail.com.
Excellent.
So, and our website is Joseph, josephbendoski, bendoski, /startwriting. Start-writing.
Excellent.
There we go.
Okay. Thanks for listening. It's time to start writing.